Baby, I'm playing on you tonight. Hunt you down, eat you alive. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Maybe you think that you can hide. I can smell yourself for miles. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Baby, I'm so what you try to do to me? It's like we can't stop, we're enemies. And when we get along, when I'm inside you.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 65. No reviews, just analysis. That's Andrea Schocklin, and I'm her trusty sidekick, Aaron Myers. Up this week, three comics from November 5th, 2014, Rocket Raccoon No. 5, Terrible Lizard No. 1, and the Kinski hardcover collecting the digital issues 1 through 6 originally released from Monkey Brain. In between segments, listen to another second opinion. And just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers ahead.
You made a ton of changes, flawlessly. I'm fairly impressed. Who exactly am I speaking to right now?
Well, don't expect it to last, so, you know, strike while the iron, see, there you go, while the iron's hot.
Okay, nicely done.
Thanks.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously, as usual. This week's theme is All Creatures Great and Small. It's fucking heartwarming, isn't it? After a month of horror books, we needed this. Like a giant, cuddly, soft, and furry palate cleanser. Wait, that came out wrong. Gross. We are looking at three books that feature animals in three dramatically different ways. Cybernetically enhanced smartass killing machines, time-traveling imprinting dinosaurs, and neglected, then coveted, man's best friend.
Aloha, Comics Therapy! Longtime listener and one-time serial caller-inner, Keith Silva. I write for ComicsBulletin.com, and here are my second opinions. The comic I often cite as one of my first comics is Star Wars 38, published in 1980, written by Archie Goodwin, and penciled by Michael Golden. Those Star Wars comics, Marvel published back in the day, were not the Star Wars I was enthralled to at the time. These were something different, something out of continuity, like a galaxy far, far away kind of out of continuity. But we'll get to that later. I was so obsessed with Star Wars that the simple notion that there were more Star Wars stories out there was too much for my 7-year-old mind to handle. I remember my dad asking the guy who ran the little newsstand in town if he would set aside a Star Wars comic for me when they came out. My first pull list. From there, I stuck close to the corporate license playbook. G.I. Joe and Transformers comics followed once those cartoons were part of my after-school rituals. Marvel would run ads for the G.I. Joe comic during the commercial breaks for the cartoon. Now that is some insidious marketing. God bless you and your pitch black heart, Jim Shooter. I would have bought most of my G.I. Joe comics at local flea markets at the time, but before long, I found my way to the comic shop. But that's another tale for another awkward show break.
Each episode, in between comic segments, you'll hear one listener answering a series of questions, sharing his or her favorite comics, creators, and more. We call it a second opinion, and this week's is brought to you by Keith Silva. I haven't listened to it yet, but he promised laughter and tears and plenty of inner circle jokes at Aaron's expense. If you want to leave your own response for us to use on a future show, the prompts are on the website, comicstherapy.com. You can call, Skype, or email your MP3. Remember to read comics responsibly, kids, and always get a second opinion.
Greetings again, Comics Therapy listeners. It's Keith Silva. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but I like to give myself a little present each day. And on Thursday afternoons, that means I read my weekly comics with a cup of good, hot, black coffee. My LCS is Earth Prime in Burlington, Vermont. I've written about the, let's call it, utilitarian decor of Earth Prime in some of my writing for my blog, Interested in Sophisticated Fun. The look of the place may be nothing to write home about, but the staff at Earth Prime are aces. I look forward to heading out to run some errands downtown, as I tell my coworkers, before I go outside the wire and head to Earth Prime. I'm really lucky when it comes to the shops I go to, either when I'm here at home or visiting family. Comic shop folk are good folk. Here's a quick story about good comic folk. There used to be a shop in Buzzards Bay, Massachusetts. It's the last town you pass through before you go over the bridge to get to the Cape. The shop was called Park Nostalgia, a perfect name for a comic book and sports card shop. I had a pull list there, mostly G.I. Joe, Transformers, with a Thor or X-Men comic sprinkled in. We would stop each week on our way to the Cape, and I would pick up my comics. This would have been about the summer of 84. I'd show up with a nod of ones and fives, do some browsing, and hope the owner finally had found a copy of G.I. Joe No. 2, which was the one issue nobody could get their hands on. That summer, I came across these comics called Secret Wars. And damn if I didn't forget G.I. Joe after that. I bought every issue off the shelf. That Mike Zeck art sang to me. Still does. So I gladly handed over my money, got my Secret Wars comics, and I'm walking on air. Off to Cold Storage Beach, ice cream at the Ice Cream Smuggler, and a comic book series that was written because the marketing divisions of Marvel and Hasbro asked a bunch of 11 and 12-year-old boys what their favorite words were. The result? Secret and war. True story. Now they base year-long events on that kind of insider information. Somewhere between the shop door and the door to my mother's car, I lose my wallet. My black wallet with a strip of Velcro to keep it closed. I don't know that I lost my wallet until a few days later. It was absolutely devastating. My mother and father suggest we stop off at Park Nostalgia and the police station to see if somebody turned the wallet in when we headed back home. No luck at the shop. So we go to the Buzzards Bay PD. I ask the officer on duty, and he hands me a manila envelope and asks, "Is this it?" I open the sealed envelope, and inside is my wallet, with not a one or a five missing. I had never been so happy. I like to think some Park Nostalgia patron turned in the wallet, and I thank God they didn't decide to spend their money on Secret Wars comics. More after this.
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter at Aaron Myers and Andrea at Andrea Shock. The show account is at Comics Therapy.
Hi.
Oh, hello.
How's your week?
Could be better.
Just because everyone's sick?
Everyone is sick except for me so far, which is really weird.
How long do you think that's going to last?
Probably not very long.
It's only been 3 weeks since your last sickness. I feel like we should make one of those big signs, like, there have been however many days since our last terrible, disfiguring death and dismemberment accident at the workplace.
It's true. It's extra disconcerting when Chrissy is sick, though, because she never, even if she gets sick, she's never really, like, down and out sick.
Well, good thing you're recording a podcast instead of taking care of your wife.
Well, what am I going to do? Hover over her, wringing my hand? The children are asleep or at school?
You could make her soup, and you could wipe her forehead.
Yeah, that, okay, well, show's over.
Do you know how to make soup? I have no sense of you in the kitchen.
Of course I know how to make soup. We've got a can opener. Mm,
yep, walk right into that one.
I know how to heat up fluid in a container.
Do you cook, though?
Yeah, of course.
No, you know, really?
I have a degree from one of those places you go to get them.
Right, like college?
But for chefs.
No, you don't.
Yeah, can't you tell by how much what I knew what it was called?
Like a culinary academy?
Yeah, that.
No, for real. Do you cook?
No, just the basics.
Okay.
Like sandwiches and sure. I can make salads.
That's assembly. I can cook not eggs. Cooking.
Eggs is cooking.
No.
Eggs?
Maybe. Eggs are like toast? A specialty skill.
Okay, so I can put that under on my resume under like special skills.
Yep.
Okay.
Podcasting.
I don't want that in there.
Egg cooking. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you want to put podcasting in under special skills? That might be padding your resume a bit.
Since anyone can do it, probably not.
Yeah.
As we've proven.
Right. What else?
Yeah, I don't know. I could cook. I can follow instructions. Like, it's not hard with the internet now to figure out how to cook something.
Sure. But I guess when I ask, can you cook? It's more like your intuitive skills when it comes to putting things together in the kitchen.
Not really. I don't prefer to. I don't have a desire to cook.
Okay.
I mean, I could if need be, but the need is hardly there these days with available food
because
pre-assembled for you.
You have a wife who does that for you.
Yeah, not because that's what I demand or expect, but it happens to work out that way.
Back to the matter at hand. I'm sorry that Chrissy is sick.
As am I. Mm-hmm. It's not so bad if she were sick, if the kids weren't sick too.
Well, not sick enough to not go to school.
Well, Luke is over it now. Like, he's on the trailing side, so he was fine enough to go back to school. And the first time, a couple times he was sick, we kept him out of school until he was all the way better. But considering all the other parents send their kids sick, dying, whatever, no matter what, which is why he's always sick, yep. We just send him back now. So
herd immunity, dude.
Yeah. Forget it. There's no point in keeping him home. Right. And he'll just run around circles around here anyway.
That's the point of preschool. People think it's about your ABCs or social skills, but it's really developing an immunity to all of the disgusting kid germs that are passed from family to family.
Apparently. So we're getting our money's worth.
Yep.
Tons. It was a huge week for comics.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I thought it was a like really 45 small bucks. Week.
No, it was huge.
But
there
not...
So, there was like, just Image alone, I had like 14.
Yeah, there was a bunch of Image stuff, but there really wasn't a ton of Marvel.
Yeah, that's all right. Look, there's more than just Marvel and DC. Sorry. Sorry to break that to you.
Right, we just mentioned Image. What's your point? Mm-hmm.
And Dark Horse and Boom had a bunch of good books. Right. And Oni had a couple of good books.
Right.
So there was a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, busy week.
I'm behind.
Well, story of your life.
It is. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I can get caught up somewhat over the weekend, but chances are I'll still be behind on a couple of key things and you'll chastise me for it later.
Undoubtedly.
Yep.
What else? There's lots of cool, like... There's still the excitement around all the Marvel stuff is still churning.
Oh, that's right. I dismissed that last week when you wanted to talk about it. Is there anything that we haven't discussed that you want to share for the good of the order?
No, not really. Nothing that's been discussed over and over by everyone else, but I guess exciting announcements.
I have a question, because we were talking about this the other day. There was additional footage leaked.
Well, the full trailer came out.
No, I'm not talking about the full actual sanctioned trailer. I'm talking about the additional footage of the scene between Cap and Iron Man that was presented to the audience at the Marvel event, but that was never released officially, but was available, I think, actually, even Comics Alliance posted it. So did you watch it, yes or no?
No, I did not.
Knowing that you didn't watch it, my next question is extra applicable. Do you feel like there's a danger of being oversaturated?
Yes, I don't. Like, I'm fine watching the trailer because it's unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather not see any other things that could kind of... I just don't want too much more revealed.
Okay.
But I mean, it's tough. Part of paying for all my comics every week is flipping comics that people are hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is kind of being in the know of stuff that's coming out ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So spoilers in a way will be kind of unavoidable in a certain aspect, because I'll be looking for books that are for characters that are going to be put in the movies or the show or whatever.
Or the speculation about those characters, even if it ends up not being correct.
Yeah, but most of the time that kind of stuff comes from pretty credible sources.
Okay.
It depends. I mean, sometimes you speculate on books and you resell them because there's a rumor of somebody showing up and they never show up.
I feel like you've been successful in that vein a couple times recently.
Sure. Yeah, I've been burned by it too.
So,
but I think I'm better at it now because I don't hang on to stuff waiting for it to like try to reach some peak that most of the time it never reaches.
Right. You're wheeling and dealing and we're all over here judging you. But it's cool because you use all of your new funds to buy more comics. So
correct.
It's kind of a wash.
The circle of life.
Right. So you try to stay up on the rumors, but you don't necessarily want to be exposed to the actual footage.
The footage or the plot details.
Okay.
You know, so you can only avoid it so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather not see the actual footage. Like, I don't mind knowing a character is in the movie if I don't really know in what capacity or why.
So I used to be all about spoilers. I think we've talked about this before, that there have been points in my life where I've skipped ahead in books and read to see if there were things that I was concerned about actually being resolved in a way that I was pleased with, or sure. Characters coming back who had stepped out of frame for a while. I wanted to make sure that their history and or future was addressed again.
Uh-huh.
But I feel a little regretful for watching that footage. I wish that I hadn't. Luckily, I'm a goldfish, so I'll forget it in like a week. And by the time I see the movie, it'll be like, hey, this is delightful. It'll either be vaguely familiar or a pleasant surprise. It's totally fine.
That's weird.
Yeah. But I do think that in general, I'm a little bit more, I'm not sure. I was going to say trusting of what I am reading or watching, but that's not actually accurate. I think that I've mellowed in terms of my anxiety in the process of actually watching or reading something, if you can believe it or not.
Like you can enjoy a story?
I can.
And let it unfold?
I can relax and just enjoy the process of the consumption of the media. It's often taken me more than one viewing to really appreciate a movie, and that's super true for live theater. I almost always would prefer to see something twice because I just am, it's difficult for me to stay focused for like 2 hours without my mind wandering and missing something. And so if I watch it a second time or attend it a second time, then I can catch all of the things that I miss. I'm better at that now than I used to be.
I'm proud of you. It's like you're really growing up.
I am. My mom still yells at me for my language on the internet, but in fact, I am a grown-up.
Technically, sure. I don't know if I'm ready to legally put my stamp of approval on that.
It's been like 17 years.
Yeah, but that's what the man says. Sure, you can pay taxes and you can fight in the military.
Did I do that math right?
Sure. Let's say yes.
Damn close to have been legally a grown-up for more time than I was not.
Right, but both you and I know 18-year-olds aren't grown-ups.
True. So true.
Yeah, I would say 25-year-olds are barely grown-ups.
Yes. I know a lot of 25-year-olds who made really poor decisions that affected the rest of their lives. Just saying.
I know a couple of 35-year-olds who are... That is a very arguable thing to say that they're grown-ups. Some I talk to... Just like every week, almost.
Yeah, almost.
Mm-hmm. But it's kind of nice to talk to them because it kind of makes me feel young again.
I
look at the mistakes that they make, right, and some of their choices.
It's,
and it's like,
really about me making you feel better about yourself. I get it.
Why else would I do this?
Anything else?
I'm sure there was stuff that happened, but I too, like, I don't forget about TVs or movies, but I forget about life quickly.
That's sad.
Yeah. Just remember what's important.
Okay. Mm-hmm. One day at a time.
Sure.
I'm done teaching for a while. That's cool.
That is cool.
It means I don't have to wake up as early. Although I just got my teaching scheduled for December. And I have to be kind of far away by 8:30 in the morning. Which means I think I'm going to have to leave around 6:30. And I kind of want to die already.
That's a bummer.
It's super sad. I'm going to be extra grumpy the first 2 weeks of December.
Well... That's all right. I'm used to it.
You want to talk about comics?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Okay.
Hey, it's me again, the dumbass who couldn't keep track of his wallet when he was 10. My younger self would cry out, say it ain't so, but I find myself moving away from weekly floppies. Part of it is the expense, and part of it is that I'm starting to think I'd like to experience these stories as more complete thoughts rather than bits and bobs. So I'll roll prompts 3 and 4 into these two exceptions, Deadly Class and Trees. I don't think I could wait 6 months to see what Wes Craig has dreamed up for Deadly Class. I follow creators, mostly cartoonists, first and never characters. And I see myself being in the Wes Craig army for a long time to come. Deadly Class is set in the 1980s, and it looks like the best comics of that era. It's a genius move on both the part of Craig, colorist Lee Lowridge, and writer Rick Remender, to find this kind of grace note to express a particular time and place. As fun as the tang of nostalgia can be, it's never enough to carry the story. The heart and passion that goes into Deadly Class is self-evident. With every issue, the creative team does what serialized storytelling is supposed to do: give readers a complete chapter in the evolving narrative. Few comics creators know how to do that as well as Remender, Craig, and Lowridge. I come to trees as more of a skeptic than a true believer. Much of this is thanks in part to my LCS guru, Damon. His advice was be patient. See what happens. As usual, Damon was right. What I've come to appreciate about trees is how Ellis works the story. I see a lot of connections between trees and Ellis's work on global frequency. Trees doesn't have that one-and-done approach Ellis took with global frequency. But there's something similar with the way he divides up the stories of each character and allows each story to be complete and apart from the main narrative. All the stories are compelling. There are no B stories in trees, only A's. Jason Howard's cartooning doesn't light me up the way Wes Craig's art does, but I'm learning to appreciate Howard's shadows and the way he draws characters' emotions. Howard has the ability to draw confusion, heartbreak, and conniving like a Renaissance master. After this, I've got one more recommendation, especially aimed at those of you who like hard liquor and supporting the arts. And now, since Andrea and Aaron don't segue, I will. Here again are the hosts of Comics Therapy, Andrea and Aaron.
Our first book this week is Rocket Raccoon number 5, written and drawn by Scotty Young, with additional art by Jake Parker. It's colored by Jean-Francois Beaulieu and lettered by Jeff Eckelberry. Rocket Raccoon is published by Marvel Comics.
I didn't do a write-up for this. Everybody's going to be fine.
Well, he's Rocket. That's Groot.
Yeah, I think...
Shenanigans ensue?
I think that at this point we all know who Rocket Raccoon is. But we were talking earlier about there's a lot of hype with this book, right? There's hype with Rocket, and there's hype with Scotty Young. So, going into this particular issue, which is like a new... it's not an arc, I don't think, at all. It's like a standalone issue.
I think so.
I would think so, too. It really kind of gets back to the root of what makes this character sort of appealing.
Which is...
Damn it, Aaron, why do I have to have words? Can't you just trust me that he's kind of delightful?
You made a statement.
I did, didn't I?
I would ask for clarification.
We should say that there's not a lot of written story with the main part of this particular issue. And that's the conceit is that Groot is telling the story. But what that made me notice much more is, like, Rocket as a badass has, like, kind of appealing vulnerability and also cockiness, which is such a difficult balance to achieve. But...
Sure, but the cockiness might come... It's protective, too. Like, as silly as the character might try to come off, and especially I think they did kind of reveal this in the movie more, that because he's a kind of a small guy who's been augmented and, you know, it has a harsh past. It's like the little big man syndrome.
Napoleon complex.
Yeah, sure. Same thing.
But typically, I think that's hateful. Like, that's never a character that I sympathize with. It's almost always presented as the worst aspects of a personality. But for...
Well, that's why I think Napoleon complex has a lot worse connotations. It's just having to always kind of defend yourself because you're smaller and people assume they can pick on you.
You don't think that it actually really comes down to the fact that he's a really adorable raccoon? I think that's huge. I think that is the secret to why his character is successful.
In the comics, yes, but you know what? I don't know if the character actually earns that. Other than that is the, that's what we're told from the beginning, that he's an adorable raccoon mercenary. And so we go in to learning about him with that kind of in the check column.
Of course we do, because we can see him. He's super cute.
But none of his actions back up that. Nothing he does is super cute.
No, but that's the gift of him being this cuddly animal. If he was just this, like, sort of scrawny little humanoid assassin, he would be much more of an asshole. And he is. It's just he's also a super cute raccoon.
Is that why, like, we allow pretty people to be jerks more than we do ugly people.
Yes, but that's taking the conversation into an entirely more serious direction than I intended.
Well, this is a very serious book, so you better get your head in the game.
No, I think that if Rocket Raccoon was like Rocket the guy, and he was just like a smaller than average man who was kind of a dick and also liked big guns, he wouldn't have the appeal. If he wasn't an adorable raccoon, then everything falls apart. The fact that his best friend is a giant tree is just a bonus.
Well, but really, the relationship is Groot is his moral center. Without Groot, Rocket Raccoon is just a bloodthirsty mercenary.
But still cute.
Sure. use what you've got to your advantage.
I think so. I think that it's so silly, and I'm not trying to present it as anything other than just fun. And this book is fucking adorable and fun, and everything about it makes me smile. But if he wasn't like a small woodland creature, then we wouldn't even be giving it any thought at all. Even the combination of like bloodthirsty killer with companion as moral center, which is mm-hmm. like a trope in and of itself, it doesn't have the kind of funness that Rocket can have because he's a raccoon.
Sure. It's also, if you really think about it, like the personality they gave him is the perfect personality for if you made a raccoon sentient and able to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Because they look cute, they're super cute, they're super intelligent, and they're nasty creatures. They are not cuddly.
That's very true. There's an element of snark that I would assume that all raccoons possess, even though I've never actually heard one speak. So, yeah.
If you do, that probably means it bit you and gave you rabies.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what animal do you think of when you think of rabies? Raccoons. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're shifty, they're clever, they're survivors, but they are not nice.
No, they're not.
I've seen people like have them as pets sometimes. What? But that is just, if you hand raise them, you know, like orphaned raccoon.
No,
but
that's not a thing. Go back to your fucking farm.
It's not something I would do. Wow. But people do the same. Well, people have skunks as pets too.
It's a terrible idea.
It is probably not the best idea. But it's better than a tiger in your apartment.
Yeah. Wow. That seems like asking.
Oh, somebody, a guy in New York had a tiger in his apartment.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, it ate him, so.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's how they discovered it, because the smell, it ate like half of his body by the time
God.
They...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
How did we get on this?
Well, raccoons will do the same. They'll rip out your throat and eat your carcass.
Hmm. I think Rocket would do that.
Oh, without a doubt.
But if Groot was there, like, maybe he would at least feel bad about it afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, if there was a bounty on your head, I don't think Groot would really care.
Should we acknowledge the fact that this is some, like, really interesting storytelling without words? We just put it out there?
I think it's a very good testament to storytelling ability to be able to do these, you know, semi-silent issues, essentially.
Yeah. Yep.
And make them work.
Avi reads this, and he hasn't read this issue yet, but I'll be interested to talk to him about it afterwards to see, because he has a tendency to go really fast when he reads comics, because mm-hmm. he reads everything like 6 or 7 or 12 times, but the first pass is fast enough that I kind of call him on it sometimes, because I feel like he's missing quite a bit of the nuance in the art. Which he is, understandably. He's, like, reading all the words and zipping through it. So this issue is going to force him to not do that, because he's going to obviously miss the story if he's only reading the words.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be cool. It's a conversation about sequential storytelling that would be generated from Rocket Raccoon, which is a statement that I never thought that I would be making.
So comics will always surprise you.
They will. But if he wasn't cute, dude, the whole thing falls apart.
Sure. I'm not going to argue it.
Cool. Next.
Just don't feed him, because you'll never get rid of him.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, because, you know, after midnight, something, something, gremlins. We've been making a lot of gremlin references, I think, like, the past 3 shows, so.
Nope, I've moved on. It's November.
What's our theme for November?
That's up to you. I'm not in charge of that. I just want to talk about good comic books. You're the one who has to like shoehorn things into some sort of silos.
This was a gimme for you. I feel like it was obvious. The very first theme for November is animals. And then you could have made a turkey joke. And you're slipping.
Yeah. I mean, I guess next week is pie. And
that's
the week
awesome.
After that.
I would love to have a week all about pie.
I bet. Well, let's talk about animals some more.
Silva here again, back with, what is it, like a fourth opinion? If you're listening to this podcast, then there's a good chance you're familiar with the Google machine and that you're able to search for things you like, such as original cast recordings of Into the Woods or Superboy and the Invisible Girl or even Superman adult onesies and ROM tchotchkes. Now, I don't want to be trolled for mansplaining, but comics are meant to be read. That means the pictures as well as the words. As the ebullient Joe Patrick said on a recent episode of Two-Headed Nerd, the lack of dialogue should never equate to categorizing a comic as being a quick read. Cartoonists, even those on the corporate comics assembly line, work hard to tell a story. So take the time to look, read the panels, watch how the cartoonists tell the story. Good cartoonists, good storytellers, are like good directors in that way. You should be able to tell what's going on even when there's silence. So my advice is point that search engine of yours at your favorite cartoonist or colorist and check out their work. Almost all of them have stuff for sale, and that money goes directly to them. Keeps them enough in the black so they can keep bringing you the comics you love to read. Marvel and DC Comics and their parent corporations can't hug you back. So visit your favorite cartoonist Etsy site or web store and show them you love them. And now, back to Comics Therapy with Aaron and Andrea.
Our second book this week is Terrible Lizard Number 1, written by Cullen Bunn and drawn by Drew Moss. It's colored by Ryan Hill and lettered by Crank with an exclamation point. Terrible Lizard is published by Oni Press.
That's how it's credited. Crank
with
an exclamation
point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't do a write-up for this one either.
You're not working. What are you doing?
Why are you a dick? I'm totally working. I'm just not teaching.
Oh, what's the difference?
Oh, there's a lot. Do you teach normally?
I teach you every week about comic books.
Oh, God, Aaron.
Come on. This is like T-ball at this point.
Terrible Lizard. Here we go. A large research complex where the scientists are working on temporal displacement and all kinds of sciency words to that effect with military backing, so nefarious plans, right? And a young girl, Jess, who lives there with her father, who's the lead research scientist. And she doesn't have a lot of friends, because there's not a lot of other kids. She's got a skateboard, so that makes her cool. And she ends up in the facility right when they're testing it. Ah, chaos and destruction and rah, and a dinosaur comes out. Whoa! And imprints on her. Which, side note. Is imprinting a thing that we just accept happens? Because...
is time travel a thing that we just accept happens? I think there's a few conceits you have to make at the beginning of the story.
You know,
just
time
to get
travel
into it.
As a science fiction conceit, I can get behind. But imprinting is not actually a thing, is it? I mean, maybe it is.
Oh, yeah, it is. With birds.
Oh, sure. Like with baby birds, and that's why you're not supposed to, like, touch them. Oh, okay, yeah, got it.
And where evolutionarily do birds come from?
Dinosaurs.
Right. So there you go.
Yeah.
I think you owe everyone an apology.
Anyway, dinosaur, rawr, comes out. It happens to be a Tyrannosaurus Rex because, of course, imprints on Jess. That makes him not a threat. The military stands down. Everybody's happy. And yet, clearly, at the end of this, with more monsters surfacing, we know that the temporal displacement was not an isolated incident. That's your setup, and go.
It's great. I like big monster / little person team-ups.
What other sort of example is there in that?
Hmm. You know, that's weird because the first thing that comes to mind, which does not fully apply, is Big Guy and Rusty. But those are two robots, but it's somewhat similar.
I was thinking like Runaways.
Yeah, sure. There's an aspect there. Yeah.
Not.
Because for the dinosaur aspect.
Right. Yeah. Young girl imprinting.
Sure.
Whatever. Not the same kind of, it doesn't seem to be like a psychic connection.
It doesn't always have to be children either. Like, there's always the monster who is the muscle for the person.
Sure.
You know, that's not a uncommon, but dinosaurs are fun, especially for kids.
Dinosaurs have a universal appeal, though. I don't think, bear with me on this one, but I don't think that dinosaurs are just for kids. For like our generation, I think that we grew up when dinosaurs became like extra popular for kids. Possibly,
well, you know why?
Because of Jurassic Park.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, and so now as adults, we're all like, "Fuck yeah, dinosaurs!" And our kids are still feeling that way, and so everybody wins.
Yeah, dinosaurs are awesome. They're real monsters that lived on Earth.
Right. We've talked about this before. I was going to be a paleontologist. It was going to be great.
Nope, we never talked about that.
That's not true.
Nope, we absolutely have not talked about that.
Are you serious? When I took my PSATs, I was going to be a paleontologist. So I and when do you take those? Like 8th grade or something?
No.
9th grade?
Like sophomore year.
I don't know. Whatever. I got all of the college, like the first round of college brochures that I got were all like science academies and like, come and be a paleontologist kind of stuff. I had already decided I was going to go to art school. I'd already decided to pursue a career in theater. What the fuck did I need with science schools? So it was a miscalculation on my part.
Well, that was a running theme.
Story of my life. But right. I really love dinosaurs, and I really, really enjoy the the evolution of the evolutionary theories. Because when we were kids, the whole dinosaurs into birds thing was not accepted fully by the like the larger scientific community, and there's been a lot more that has come out, and like a couple of key researchers who have pointed to that, and that's an interest of mine that has carried through for like most of my life, like legitimately from the science perspective, because I think it's really fascinating.
Well, I think it's extra fascinating that it's only been 6,000 years, too. And, like, people, you know, the people, early peoples riding around on Brontosaurus.
Like cavemen? And,
well, no, I was thinking more like, because, you know, Jesus created the Earth with the dinosaurs, and then they spread the gospel up top there, you know, Tyrannosaurus-i with rocket launchers. Maybe I'm confusing now Christianity and dino riders, but that is a book I would read.
Yeah, I don't want to step on any creationist's toes, but I don't think that in any of those stories, it's Jesus that created the earth.
Oh, well, I mean, does it really matter?
Yeah. I mean, to those guys, it does.
Sure. I mean, look, I'm sorry, but if you think the earth is 6,000 years old, probably I'm not the person you want to listen to on a podcast.
For so many reasons.
Sure. Yes. But I don't know how we're going from terrible lizard to creation theory.
You did that.
It just made me think of the creation museums where they show, you know, dinosaurs with people and everything.
Agreed.
And how kind of hilarious those are.
But we were talking about the fact that this is like ostensibly an all ages book or
young adult.
Young adult, sure, whatever. But the fact that it's dinosaurs, it makes it way more appealing to me than if it was just like if it was like a mythical creature, that would be super cool. But if it was another,
but I like the sci-fi aspect of it. Like, if you made it a mythical creature, then you lose like the time travel and displacement and all like the science gone wrong stuff.
No, not at all. It would just be like interdimensional. I mean, like a mythological creature that would exist in a parallel dimension or something.
Yeah, but that's a level of complexity you don't need to add. You could just throw you have a dinosaur, and then you have, crazy monkey that he has to fight.
Okay, but, like, did you see that final image, that crazy monkey doesn't exist in, you know, our planet's history.
Well, we'll see. Maybe in the future it does.
You're stepping on your own theory's toes here, Myers.
I believe the future is yet to come, so I'm willing to step out on that limb.
But the dinosaur part is what is gonna kick ass here, because kids and dinosaurs, as we said, great combination. I think we all secretly harbor this desire to have like a dinosaur companion.
Yeah,
just me.
No.
Although I think smaller. In my case, I would like, you know, raptor size as opposed to Tyrannosaurus Rex size.
Raptors are still fairly big. Any kind of dinosaur, you're gonna need some space.
You know, 9 to 12 feet as opposed to 18 to 22.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a dinosaur farm.
Oh, yeah, like an island, like off the coast of Costa Rica, maybe?
Yeah, it's too warm down there. Equatorially. Yeah. You just get like, maybe even not a dinosaur, like a mammoth would be awesome.
Don't they also want something a little bit cooler, though, than Oregon?
Oregon's kind of cool right now.
You have to shave your mammoth?
We could summer in Alaska.
That is a euphemism for something.
I'm sure it is. On that note, I think we've migrated out of the young adult territory.
Oh, I'm sorry, Terrible Lizard. You're all ages. I apologize. That was uncalled for.
Yeah, not cool. Let's talk about something that is for adults.
All right, enough is enough. Follow me at Keith PM Silva on Twitter and check out some of the great work that's being written by my fellow contributors at comicsbulletin.com. There you'll get in-depth analysis of comics, all comics, those that you know and love, and hopefully more that you don't know or love yet. Thanks to Aaron and Andrea for this chance to record a second opinion. I'll go out on this. Comics therapy is a gift. Every week, we all tune in to this and other podcasts like Panel Culture, Two-Headed Nerd, and many, many others. The people that put these shows together do so out of love and passion, and that's it. That kind of purity is a rare and precious thing. There are a few things in this life that we get to do because we want to do them. It's probably been a long time, maybe since you read your first Secret Wars comic or saw your first weekday afternoon cartoon, that you were inspired to do something, to write a story or draw your favorite character or make Wolverine claws out of an Erector set and go play in the backyard. A long time since you got the chance to share how much you love the things you love. That's what this is, and that's why we do this.
Our final book this week is the Kinski hardcover, which collects all 6 issues of the comic. Kinski is written and drawn by Gabriel Hardman. The trade was published by Image Comics, and the issues are available digitally by Monkey Brain Comics through Comixology.
Okay, so this
Let me guess, you didn't write a summary for this?
No. I didn't write a summary at all for any of these. I thought I made that very clear at the beginning. You've yelled at me twice. Do you need to yell at me a third time?
Yes, just for symmetry.
Okay. Symmetry would be 2 then, not 3.
For triometry.
Nice.
Go ahead.
I was just going to point out that this is a complete story. There aren't going to be more issues, to my knowledge. I mean, it ends, and that's the end of it.
That is that. Sometimes stories complete themselves.
Yes. Did it end the way that you thought it was going to end?
I don't know. I didn't really know how it was going to end. I didn't really have any expectations.
I want to put you on the spot because this is a dog, and you have historically had difficulty with dog stories that don't end, or not necessarily that don't end well, but that are...
I don't like dogs in peril.
Stressful getting there. Yeah, you don't like dogs in peril, and Kinski is in peril throughout the course of the story.
He is. He's never explicitly hurt.
He's not hurt, but you can't argue that he's not in danger.
Yeah, no, it is. I loved the story for its many layers, and I also found it stressful because something I wanted to read probably maybe more than if it was a different type of animal, if that makes sense. Like, it's sort of like the dread, but you have to keep reading kind of thing.
Hmm. Okay.
So
I don't think that this would work if it was any other kind of animal.
No, probably not. But why is that? Because I'll answer my own question. Because dogs are... The companionship we get from dogs and the ties we have to dogs is different than like a cat or an iguana or something like that.
Okay, wow. An iguana, really?
What's wrong with iguanas?
Nothing.
Okay.
I think cats are amazing. 100% a cat person.
Cats are amazing. Cats are far different than dogs.
They are. And so, Avi and I were talking about this recently, about if you could raise a cat to act more like a dog. We were walking through the mission, and there was a hipster guy with a kitten on his shoulder. And
sure.
Of course. He had a beard, he had glasses, he had a kitten. It was fine.
Right. Isn't he interesting?
Yes. But Avi wanted to know why that cat was into that. So then we had a conversation about the fact that animals have different personality types also. Like my brother and sister-in-law just got a kitten, and their new kitten has a much more endearing personality than their existing cat, who kind of hates me, and so I might be a little bit judging. New kitten is like loves everybody, and you can just tell, like, there's a different personality hardwired into that cat. And so we talked about the kitten on the guy's shoulder, like, maybe that cat is just like chill and also curious and has always been cool with that, and so it didn't take a lot of coaxing to incorporate that into his routine, or her. I don't know. But then from there, we talked about how you probably can't do the kinds of things with a cat that you can do with a dog in public. That most cats are solitary by nature and like to hang out at home and aren't going to be as predictable around people. And you can train them, but they don't have the like innate people-pleasing aspect that dogs do. No, that have been also, like bred into dogs.
Right, exactly. We haven't selectively bred cats for those traits.
Which is a shame because cats are so much better.
Than dogs?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Certainly not.
You're so wrong.
Well, there's a reason why dogs are the preferred companion animal, because survival-wise, there's a reason we've had them by our side for, well, 6,000 years.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to elaborate? Are you going to tell me what it is about dogs that's so appealing?
We took them from wolves, you know, they've been bred out from lines of wolves, but because we're pack creatures, they are instinctively pack creatures and will hunt and be companions with us.
Did you imprint with your dog? Is this a Twilight thing? Aaron, I did not imprint
with my dog, since both of my dogs were already past the puppy stage when we had them. But you bond with your dogs.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. I had cats. Growing up, we had 12 cats.
Because you and lived on some a farm. Of them,
I lived on property.
You lived in a cabin. I shouldn't call it a farm. You lived in the woods by yourself.
I lived with my family. Some people don't have to grow up in an urban hellscape to to have a childhood.
You had 12 cats.
Had 12 cats.
30 miles away from civilization.
Sure. And we had two dogs.
Okay.
And cats are great for keeping down the, you know, the mice and
the rodent population.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they're utilitarian. They're not actual companions.
No, there are plenty of companions. Like one of those 12 cats, like several of those cats were very much interested in being more with the family than outside.
So it is a personality thing.
Yeah, just like everything has a personality.
Right. Including iguanas, because, whoa.
Sure, but it's all a matter of degrees. You know, dogs and cats are still more animal than they are, you know, sentient, disconnected from nature kind of creatures like humans.
Okay.
But at the same time, there still are traits and personalities with all of them. So Zootie, who was the indoor cat, she lived to almost 22, And she was very much wanted to be inside and be with us and, you know, be on laps and be around people.
Hmm. Okay.
Whereas most of the other cats were happy to be with the other cats or, you know, stalking in the woods or, you know, hanging out on the cat table.
Right. Cat table.
Well, we had a table where they would be fed that was outside. And one of our dogs, she loved to chase the cats. So often, like, she would chase them and they would find refuge on the cat table.
Oh, that's awesome.
Above her. And she wasn't, like, trying to catch them. Sure. It was chasing them.
Sure.
So, yeah. Life on the farm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to this. The reason it works so well as a dog is because of those connections we have. We, you know, it's the anthropomorphization, which is not the word, but you get the idea.
I do.
Of placing our emotions, fears, hopes, etc. upon our dogs, because they can't really speak back, and most of the time you can interpret their looks as whatever you want them to be. Which is really what this book is about. It's, you know, it's that sublimation of fears, change, hope, doubt, etc.
Well, Joe projects all of his everything on this dog.
Yeah.
I mean, everything else is reduced. It is eliminated in terms of his desire. Even the strange burgeoning relationship with Holly goes on the back burner. Like, he makes the choice of the dog over her.
He does, but his life is in flux and in change. And the dog, it's not about the dog. It's about disconnecting from one life and connecting to a new one.
But,
and that's what the story is about.
So does the dog represent that new life?
The dog represents the touchstone or the key or whatever you want to, the sledgehammer,
mm-hmm.
to break away from the old life and find something new. But since he can't emotionally and cognitively, I think, reconcile that, you put that onto an object, a thing, a something, and place all that emotion onto it, you know, and then it becomes the epicenter for all of those.
Yeah, stuff. There's a point of obsession that he reaches very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's almost that as long as the dog remains unattainable or taboo, he has a purpose.
Yeah, and you don't have to dwell upon what you're leaving behind until it's gone.
Mm-hmm. You can focus on, like, the next crisis related to the dog so that you don't actually have to deal with the fact that everything else in your life is in crisis.
Well, this hit home a lot for me because I think I went through something very similar when we lived in San Diego.
Did you steal somebody's dog?
No, but the dogs became, especially with Roxy, our first dog, before we had Molly, I would do almost everything I could to make sure I kept to a schedule for her, thinking it had to be this way for her and for her happiness. But really, it was because I didn't like my job. You know, I wanted to start to move on. We felt like I was in a rut. And the obsession and the focus of, okay, I have to figure out how to work my schedule so I can be home, you know, by this time in the afternoon to take her to the park so she has time to run around. I need to, you know, make sure I get up at this time, make sure, you know, work might suffer because this has to take precedence over it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now with hindsight looking back on it, it was like I didn't really like my job. I was, you know, stressed out and working too much. And that became a way of focusing and shoving aside what was really going on in my life. So, I mean, very much in the same way, the dog became the focus of things and without addressing what was really going on.
Right, right.
So, I mean, that's why I found this very, you know, powerful. And I understood a lot of it.
So do you think the fact that I am not a dog person is why this was a story to me about a sort of difficult to like human, and I sympathized with the dog as opposed to relating to Joe's plight?
No, because I think it's hard to say, like, you're not a dog person. Like, If you had a dog come into your life, just like anything else, that needed to be taken care of,
I would resent it. I'm not even going to couch that with anything. At this point in my life, if a dog showed up and I had to deal with that dog, I would resent needing to take care of that dog because I would feel obligated to do so. But mm-hmm. I would not be able to like conjure up an emotional connection to the dog.
I think it all depends though. Okay. Because it's easy to say that in this sort of nebulous way where it's just dog, you know, lowercase d. But when there's a real person,
I haven't had a capital D dog before.
Right. You know, it's the individual versus the kind of the thought of something. Like, it's easy to say I'm not a dog person because you're not the person who would go out and get a dog and feel like you need to have a dog in your life. Mm-hmm. But if a dog showed up, then that person needs help just like anything. Like, you are a monster, but you still have an emotional core. And you will bond with something that it bonds with you.
Okay. Imprinting. It always comes back to that.
It does. It's not just for dinosaurs.
Or birds.
Yeah. Or birds. So on that note, I think we're done. I think I've taught you everything about yourself I can.
This week.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt. I'll have a whole slew of new things that we have to psychoanalyze next week.
Without a doubt.
I also have to come up with 3 books that relate to pie, so I better get on that.
Yep. You can also, it could be stuffing related. It could be cranberry sauce related. Mm. There's a lot of sports on, right, during Thanksgiving?
I think. It's hockey season, too.
So, you know, I guess it could be sports.
You're so resigned. We should say, I mean, we'll continue to be specific about this as the weeks go on, but just looking at the calendar for the next, 6 or 7 weeks until the end of the year, mm-hmm. we will be on and off in terms of interviews just because the holidays jack up people's schedules. So,
right. People can listen to us or they don't have to.
I'm not saying that there's any sort of pressure. I'm just saying that it is possible that there will be several episodes upcoming around Thanksgiving and Christmas respectively, where we choose not to have a guest out of respect for everybody's schedule. That's all. It's all good.
Because we are nice people like that.
Mostly me, but
yes.
Your mileage may vary.
Right. All right. Well,
cool.
What do we say at the end?
Make sure that you pre-order your comics at your local shop or subscribe to them digitally. All of the show notes and other details about all the shit that we just talked about is on the website, comicstherapy.com. And we will see you next week.
Superstars and cannonballs are running through your head. A television freak show, cops and robbers everywhere. Subway makes me nervous, people pushing me too far. I got to break away, so take my hand out, cause